All right, let's head down to Pennington County, South Dakota. Emergency management, a little bit of fire training going on. Actually, fire prevention training, emergency management training. And folks, as you know, we've been following the world of virtual reality over the past year. And what's happening is a lot of emergency management, a lot of mining. We've had discussions about manufacturing down on the floor are getting involved with virtual reality for training. Last month, Clint Kling with Shepherd VR, who's going to be on in just a moment, we talked about how the military was getting into virtual reality through mental health, meaning psychology or psychological issues and psychology, mental health when it comes to suicide prevention. So the world of virtual reality is going in a lot of different directions. Clint Kling has been on the ground floor of it, has done a project with the Black Mines of South Dakota State. I'm not sure what the official name of that university is anymore, as I didn't have my notes in front of me, so I do apologize. But let's bring Clint Kling in here, as well as Adam Davis. Adam Davis is with Pennington County, South Dakota, Emergency Management. Clint, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Jason. How you been?
Hey, not too bad. Mr. Adam Davis, how about you?
Doing real good, thank you.
Now, the two of you just concluded an emergency management conference, training session, something along those lines, and virtual reality was used. Clint, go ahead and just kind of set the table. And then, Adam, my understanding is you are a user of the virtual reality. So after Clint sets the table, I'll have you kind of take the baton and explain what you went through. So Clint, what did you set up down there for the individuals down in Pennington County?
Thanks, Jason. We were trying to go through a VR simulation of the fire extinguisher systems that are handheld. The PASS acronym is something that's widely used in fire extinguisher training. Also, kind of understanding how fire works, and then types of fires that can be used with fire extinguishers as well. And Adam and his team, they do trainings or helps out with trainings here in Pennington County with fire extinguishers. And so we decided to look at the VR system to see if, you know, this could be an option for some of the clients out there or people wanting to use fire extinguishers. Some days the handheld systems or the physical systems do not work on rainy days or cold weather days. So maybe the VR system could be a substitute, or maybe altogether it would be something preferable. And so Adam, having a background with safety and training and also virtual reality, went through the system and was giving feedback and helping us, essentially develop even a better product for customers.
When you say, and Adam, I'll have you take the baton in a second here, but when you say handheld, do you mean like handheld for virtual reality or like handheld fire extinguisher?
Handheld for virtual reality. Like there was no physical fire extinguisher device. It was just using the VR goggles and hand controllers with that.
Okay, that's what, when you say handheld, it's more the controllers then. Okay. And that was what I was wondering. So, you know, you're in this virtual reality simulation, Adam. Talk to me, like, what should I expect on something like that? I think a lot of people are not even skeptical. They just don't know what to think, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Well, and so I've only been with the county since January of this year. Before this, I spent about 15 and a half years doing helicopter search and rescue and really involved in the instructional side of that, teaching as a senior instructor. And one of the tools that we use heavily in that was we leverage virtual reality for a lot of our training. The company that I worked for previously, we developed a lot of our own. So I've got a pretty good appreciation for how virtual reality, just as a technology set, can be leveraged in a whole myriad of different safety trainings, be it from teaching people how to do hoist rescue out of the back of a helicopter to, doing really good awareness training with fire extinguishers, as Clint demoed for me today with his system. So, there's going to be people that struggle with the leap and the concept of utilizing technology versus going outside and starting a fire and using an actual fire extinguisher to put it out. It takes a little bit of a level of faith for new and uninitiated, especially potentially when you're dealing with a little bit of an older demographic in some situations where they're not used to using technology as an everyday tool to help us do things in a lot of cases, more efficiently and at a lower price point, especially if this is something you're paying for. So, what Clint demoed for me with his system today was, it was a great demonstration of the use of technology, where if you get a potential commercial client or customer, someone who doesn't have the time or capacity to take all their staff members, for example, out and do physical hands-on live fire training, if their objective is to teach fire extinguisher awareness and concepts, utilization of virtual reality is an absolute tool that involves immersion and development of critical memory items, as well as at least the starting point of some muscle memory development, that they can do in an enclosed office space, for example, and typically at a much faster pace than if you're having to refill actual fire extinguishers or reset or relight live fires, things like that add and take a lot more time to accomplish.
Emergency management, of course, you're talking about flight or flight situations. You're talking about real impact decisions, life and death. And one of the most amazing, and I actually mean amazing, because I was blown away by this thread of the virtual reality that I've, I guess, discussed over the past year, was actually, I think it was last month after the NFL draft, the second overall pick, Jaden Daniels, who went to the Washington Commanders. He was at Louisiana State University. He went from like a sixth round pick to second overall. And he attributes a lot of it to virtual reality. And the takeaway, which is the part that I just found amazing, was he talked about how he could slow the game down. And of course, I thought of Muhammad Ali, I thought of Ty Cobb, I thought of Pete Rose, all these greats in sports that talk about how they can see the ball coming in 5 miles an hour instead of 95 miles an hour. They can see the seams on the football before they catch it. Just the game slows down, but in real time. So when I hear that in virtual reality, and I hear Jaden Daniels talking about that in sports, immediately I think of emergency management, how, my goodness, if it works in sports, I can't imagine when you're something burning and falling from the sky is happening, and a number of different life and death type of situations. So has that crossed your mind, Adam, at all? And Clint, we've talked about this as well, but Adam, has that crossed your mind about how virtual reality can slow time down in real time so that your mind can actually be ahead of what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly saw that again with my background in utilizing VR for teaching helicopter rescue stuff. I mean, I saw that demonstrated on a regular reoccurring basis, where students once they would go through a course of learning, it really, I don't know about, per se slowing time down as a concept, but the idea that they're not surprised by what they're seeing because they've been through it before, basically. And I have long said, and again, as Clint addressed, I've been involved with or utilizing VR for many, many years now in a professional application of teaching. And I would never say that VR is going to be 100% replacement for live training, but it maximizes one's ability. Anytime we look at the human mind and we understand that some things have shock value. So you just, Jason, described some, situations that would have shock value if you'd never seen it. I think you referenced like things, fire falling from the sky or something like that, right? Like that's going to have a shock factor, which tends to make people have a bit of a lockup response a lot of times because they're just, the human mind becomes overwhelmed. So what I've seen with my background, and not necessarily just emergency management per se, because emergency management is literally just that. Like we help manage large scale emergencies, whereas it's our firefighters and our police officers and other responders that are out dealing with the actual shock and awe type situations. But what I've learned and what I appreciate from this system is that when any time we can pre-introduce someone to a scenario, an event. So if and when they do experience that in real life, it's not the first time they've seen it. Maybe we have already perfectly recreated that in a virtual environment, but at the very least, they have already achieved those goals. They've done those tasks, they've seen those different elements. And it has started to become normalized in their mind through safe virtual training. So when they do encounter it in an actual setting, it's more normalized. It allows them to respond more calmly, and understand, whatever their standard checklist is. So here today, with Clint's VR system that he demoed for me, we were talking about the simple PASS acronym for how to use a fire extinguisher: point, aim, squeeze, and sweep. So when a student goes through that in a virtual environment where it's really structured from a good educational setup, kind of the concept of I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you, I'm going to tell you, and then I'm going to tell you what I told you. So after, I don't know, 15 minutes in this VR module, even, just that short amount of time, there's already this fundamental understanding of, okay, I know this acronym and I remember this acronym. And if nothing else, that's my takeaway. So if I were to have to go, pull out a fire extinguisher and put out an actual fire, I've been through this in this nice, safe, controlled environment that was a structured educational format. So, from a learning standpoint, it was taught in a manner that we know most adult learners are going to have some pretty decent retention from, and have a higher opportunity to effectively apply those skills in an actual situation.
You mentioned the age demographic or a learning curve. Clint or Adam, whichever one of you would like to field this, what are you experiencing when it comes to the different age demographics and the learning curve? Are you finding the younger ones are adapting it faster than the older ones? Are you finding the older ones are reliving their Atari days and jumping on and pretending they're playing Pong? Or talk to me about the learning curve and the ages.
So I'll touch on that a little bit here, just because again, I've taught a lot of students in various virtual systems, and if I'm speaking on generalities, like generally speaking, yes, I would say that the younger demographic tends to adapt better to it than an older demographic. But again, I don't get caught up in absolutes. That's obviously not going to be the case across the board. But generally speaking, people that grew up with a cell phone in their hands or different video game systems or consoles, and especially even the even more younger generations, like kids that are just 18, 19 years old now, who probably grew up with actual virtual reality systems, that they've already played with. It is easier to get them to quote unquote buy into it or understand that there could be value in it versus people that have been very, technologically disconnected for most of their lives and maybe still walk around with a flip phone instead of a smartphone or something like that, where it can be a little bit harder. But I will say, I'll speak about myself. So back in I guess it was 2011 when my boss at the time told me that we were going to invest in virtual reality and start teaching with it, and I was going to be one of the people in charge of that. I had the absolute worst attitude about it whatsoever. I proclaimed, and I quote, "There is no chance that I can train someone how to do a rescue out of the back of a helicopter in a computer." I had a terrible attitude. Fortunately, it wasn't my company. I just worked there, and we bought the technology, and I learned how to use it, and then I trained someone on it. My first student, I took someone in. We spent a week in our training facility where I worked at the time, and then went out and did that person's life flight phase training in the back of the helicopter. And I was immediately humbled, and corrected. I had to admit that I was wrong, because what I saw was stunning to me. So historically, I would always teach someone 100% in the back of the helicopter, and it would take a lot of time, and you would burn a lot of fuel in the process. But when I took this person who had spent a week in VR and on a physical tower, but developing these critical memory items and critical muscle memories, and then I threw him in the back of a helicopter, and it was like they had been doing it for, it was like they had been training for months. Like they were familiar with it. They adapted to it. So, that's just my own use case of having a very, initially a very negative attitude about it. This is years and years ago, but becoming a believer, becoming an advocate in the system. And so I have shared that story with many times when I have had older students, older generation who had a similar negative attitude about it and walked in and said, "Oh, this is just a silly video game." And through good learning techniques and or I'm sorry, teaching techniques and styles, and a slow integrated application, at the end of sessions, I've had people that were initially naysayers, older demographic people that were naysayers, come out saying, "Wow, this is a pretty incredible tool, and it actually does serve a place in our worlds."
Jason, one thing I thought was interesting when I was looking at some of the effects of virtual reality with training, people that were an older generation that actually had experience in the industry, they would still learn. What the new guys coming in that didn't have the industry experience, some of the numbers that were coming out from the research that I was doing was actually showing that we were downloading almost experience to the new user. They became a much older hand, we'll say, at the task or the job or the industry that they were going into now that they've done a virtual reality program or at least something that's well put together and that can display and relay some of that real critical information, like Adam was talking about with muscle memories and looking at kind of the wow factors and taking some of that edge off so they can actually start learning the things that they need to.
How are the people responding to it? The students or trainers or whatever it is? I mean, are they able to pick up on it? Is there on the spot training needing, or is it pretty self-explanatory?
As far as onboarding goes, I think you need a little bit of that depending on the user. If they have a VR experience, what I've noticed that they're pretty much hands off. They can just get in and go right away to the training and go through it. Some of the guys that haven't had VR, there's a little bit of more of a steeper curve. And I will say that kind of limits a little bit of their learning. But once they kind of get over that hump, then they're able to really, go and pick up on whatever is being trained. Is that kind of how you experienced it, Adam?
Yeah, I'd say the same there, that if it's been people that have are more open to technology, or certainly if they've used other VR systems in the past, their adaptation to it is it tends to be a lot quicker. Whereas sometimes, and when I would write training curriculums before, and mind you, I was teaching minimum 6 day classes. A lot of times they're 12 day classes, so they're longer courses of learning. But I would always build in, regardless of student, like the initial training session in the simulator was really just to get them used to this system. Like I wasn't looking for any level of proficiency or making sure they were doing their skills correctly. I was just adapting them to the environment, letting them understand, like, yeah, how the goggles work, how the physical interface devices work, and getting them used to it.
What's interesting, and I don't necessarily mean interesting in a positive way, but 67% to 85% of firefighters are still volunteer in this country, depending on if you're in rural or city. And I just don't see the trend going the other way, which is really bizarre to me. But again, that's politics, and I wanted to stay more on just the training aspect, especially when you're talking about volunteers. Is this something that would be beneficial to a lot of these volunteer emergency service staff people in rural America and all these places across the country, and a lot of pipelines go in rural places, and so rural America needs to be a little bit more innovative and up to date on some things because of the just the grid and the power structure and how that infrastructure is built. Have you seen in any advantages or disadvantages given, that the firefighters and emergency services, so many are volunteer?
I mean, I guess I don't know that I can speak directly to that, but what I'll say, there's a couple different facets when you look at that. So I'm a, as a user of it, I'm a big fan of technology in general. Like I think technology, can help with training, be that VR type technology or other, other systems. I think that can help with trainings and efficiencies. Unfortunately, when it comes to the volunteer world, like I know a lot of, rural parts of America, they have volunteer departments because they don't really have a lot of funding, for, modern equipment. So I think you might run into some issues there. Like if you're trying to get a volunteer department that hasn't bought a new fire engine, for example, since, I don't know, 1992 or something like that. And it was probably used at that point already. Like trying to get them to spend money on virtual reality training systems, like there might be some issues there from a functional standpoint. But again, like as a concept and capability, I think, VR is a great tool, and anyone can benefit it, be it a volunteer paid career staff. Like there's a lot of different, virtual reality training systems and tools out there. And I think those, if paired with good instructors and good training curriculums, can benefit anyone out there potentially.
Clint, you might have to bring it on the road, man. Might have to be a road show. Go and go on these emergency management virtual training to volunteer places all over America. Because I marvel at that stat. And I get the funding and a number of different things, but at the same time, it's a pretty basic need for society is emergency services. And
It is.
so, yeah, and I see where we spend money in other places, so it's kind of like priorities and et cetera. But just from a logistics standpoint, I could see, and correct me if I'm wrong, Clint or Adam, but a lot of these training, especially in some of the rural areas, that was a lot of prep work. I mean, you're talking about eight different people that are volunteering, 12 different people that need to get 12 different bosses to say, yeah, you can have that time off or this time off. And then you got to get the training person to come and, put the kitten up in the tree and figure out what your training is going to be and that sort of thing. Where, boy, you could see where this virtual reality, just people could come in sometime during the day and do it right there on the spot and a number of different things. So I am seeing a lot of the proficiencies and the efficiencies, but I do see your point to where owning the equipment and some of the investment there could be a little bit much, considering they got a 40-year-old fire truck that was bought used when they bought it. That's a great point. And that's just a fantastic point. But how Pennington County, what are some of the emergencies down there that you face up in, say, in North Dakota? There's a lot of flooding,
Right.
wildfires. What's down in Pennington County? Is that Black Hills area?
Yeah, so we are Pennington County is located right in the Black Hills. So, same thing in the summertime, we certainly face threat of wildfire risks. Flood events have a historic place in the hills here as well. And then really winter time, we face some pretty significant winter storms, that can be very, very impactful as far as large scale emergencies go.
Man, that Grand Teton Highway, that interstate, that's an emergency. I don't know how you train for that. I don't know if you guys saw that or not, but up in basically the interstate just eroded off. And
Yeah, I saw that in the news. I don't remember, was it yesterday? Maybe I did. I saw some pictures and video of that.
well, I get most of my news now from social media, so I mean, I never know the dates. And so I always got to go and do a quick news search when I see one of these videos that popped up. But to me, again, that goes back to the training, the roads, emergency services. We're talking about the basic parts of government, the basic parts of community, the basic parts of civilization. What Adam, what's your one takeaway from all this virtual reality? You said you did helicopters and search and rescue, so that's an early adapter to virtual reality. The whole helicopter and flight simulation, that's virtual reality. What
Right.
how long have you been doing kind of the virtual simulation world, and what's your biggest takeaway from it compared to real life?
Like Clint said, I started using virtual reality in 2012. What the company that I worked for at the time, that's when we adopted it and really just went headlong into figuring out how to leverage it as a training tool. And, when you talk about it, how virtual reality in aviation, that's been a thing for a long time, right? Like there's been flight simulators for as long as any of us can remember. But the use of it for teaching rear crew members, so folks working in the back of the helicopter, the guys that were actually like hoisting out of the helicopter or running the hoist to lower people out of the helicopter, that really didn't start until like 2010, 2012 time frame. So we, the company I worked with before, like we jumped in on it at the start of it, and now there are a multitude of organizations out there that are utilizing and developing. And what my takeaway from that is that, though what I was doing at the time was, at the ground floor of it, when you look at it now, the fact that there are multiple organizations using it to teach rear crew rescue, helicopter rescue personnel, is just a testament that it is the way of the future, right? Like nobody else would be spending literally millions of dollars investing in developing this technology for people to use if it wasn't viable, if it wasn't a good tool. And that's what we're seeing every day. More and more people figuring out how to leverage VR and other technologies in new and unique ways that we hadn't previously thought about. So there's really, potentially there's an unlimited future for it. It just takes, enough smart people to sit there and say, oh, like, hey, like we could do this with VR. Like never thought about that before, but this is how we could make it better, or this is a new capability. So like point in case, the virtual system that I used to teach on for helicopter rescue stuff specifically was for teaching people how to hoist out of the back of a helicopter. We never thought that that system would have applicability for teaching people how to do confined area landings, where you take a helicopter and land it in a relatively small, tight, confined space, and there's certain functions that your rear crew members need to be doing to help clear a helicopter down into that space. Well, that wasn't what we set out to do when we started purchasing and utilizing and teaching on these systems. But we quickly found out, like, oh, there's an actual need. Like, we're being requested by our customers, by our trainees, like, oh, hey, can we do this with it? And we're like, yeah, I don't know why not. Like, I mean, that's not what you're here paying us for, but sure, like, absolutely. And that turned into a whole new curriculum set just organically, through the process of using it, and different minds, different perspectives saying, oh, wow, well, actually, we can do this too, and we can do that. And so the takeaway is that technology is here to stay, obviously, whether we like it or not. And so figuring out how to better leverage it, is just to our collective benefit, because then maybe someday we will have really great virtual systems that we do figure out how to deploy to, maybe less financially capable emergency agencies or things like that have a need for it. Because the more technology gets developed, as we've seen with, I don't remember when flat screen TVs first came on the market. Nobody but super rich people could afford them, and now you can buy a nice flat screen TV for a couple hundred bucks down at the store, right? Like, it's going to be the same way with VR and similar technologies, is that the more it gets developed, the more that people are utilizing it, the more affordable and societally ingrained it becomes.
Clint Kling, Shepherd VR, is our guest, as well as Adam Davis. That's the voice you just heard. He's with Pennington County, South Dakota Emergency Management. And Clint, either you can answer from a business standpoint, or Adam, you can answer from a training, the person that just went through the training and hired the service. To me, I agree with you 100% that this is going to be like every other technology. And if we want to get into, Moore's law, which is the speed of a processor gets twice as fast every 18 months, and it gets twice as small every 18 months, And Moore is the founder of Intel, and I forget his first name, but Moore. And so technology, even if it slows down, which it hasn't since the 60s, we're still going to be going. There's enough gas in the tank to carry this momentum into the next generation. So when I take a look at virtual reality, to me, I see this being as common as CPR pretty soon, where it's going to start with emergency services. It's going to start with the military. It's going to start with the factory floor. But pretty soon, why not? Why not certify everybody in fire management? If it's just a couple hours at the virtual reality machine, that's where I see it going eventually, to where you're going to have people certified in areas that they never dreamed of, just because companies are going to make it mandatory up and down, that sort of thing, for insurance reasons even. I mean, think about it. If everybody in your building is certified under fire management, blah, 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 man, your state farm rates might be next to nothing. Who knows? Clint, have you thought about this, where the virtual reality from a business standpoint, boy, it might be as common as CPR class? Or Adam, have you thought about that, either one of you?
Well, that was kind of the hopes, is to get more people going through the training, just because I knew from the research that I did was so effective, and that if we're doing trainings and we're spending time doing it, it's like, why don't we get the best use out of it is that we can, and that we can help as many people as we can. And so this is where I thought VR would be a good tool to do that with. And I still got hopes, Jason. I think it's going that way.
Adam, how about you, where, you know, take something that's a little bit more complicated, like something falling, burning from the sky, but because it's in virtual reality, you can certify everybody from human resources to sales to maintenance under whatever, you know, some 101 type program. But do you see a day where that could happen, Adam?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I just think back, you know, from the aviation perspective, right? There would have been a time when this conversation was happening and people couldn't imagine logging flight time in a computer, right? Like that conversation, I'm sure, happened years ago, and people said it'll never happen. But now, look, and Clint is a licensed pilot, right? Like, you can log flight hours, not all of them, but you can log flight book qualified hours in a simulator. Depends what type of simulator you're using, if it's an FTD or an actual, like, you know, full level D or full motion simulator. But point being, aviation, one of the most, you know, stringent sectors in our world, from a regulatory standpoint, they can document, you know, document quote unquote flight time in a simulator. Now, I believe, and I can't speak on this one intelligently, but I believe there's, you know, similar systems for truck drivers now, right? Like where they can do some of their mandatory training in simulators. So from that perspective, just the fact that we have evidence that it has happened, yeah, I don't know, you know, the specifics or what those certifications would be, if you will, but absolutely, we have evidence that, you know, there was a time when it never happened, and now it's, at least in certain sectors, it's normal to be able to achieve at least some part of some qualifications through virtual simulation.
I mean, I'm already picturing Dwight from The Office and Kevin from The Office going through this virtual reality of the building burning down simulation training. I mean, but that's really where I see a lot of it going, to where if it's, sir, well, and Clint, you're seeing the mining industry, where it's not uncommon for everybody that works for a company that's 1 second of themselves on a job site, they got to be certified. Like they got to go through 8 hours of training before they can set foot on that rig or whatever the case might be. So I do see where a lot of this could streamline and create a lot of opportunities, really. Great opportunities that probably wouldn't exist otherwise, just because of logistics, cost, and physical geography. if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's totally all that, Jason, and it's just hands down, it's better training, period, you know, for the most part, because some of the trainings I had to do to get on the rigs, it was pretty much a click through type deal, you know, and you're not learning much off of that. But when you're actually engaging in it and being immersive, and you're actually kind of in some ways conducting your own training, like there's some responsibility for that. And so now you're, you know, have a responsibility to, you know, learn this stuff and to understand it.
You know, the other part too is a lot of times when you renew certifications, you can sit at your desk and do it on a computer while you're watching Netflix and eating a burrito and doing other things. And in fact, three or four of you can be doing the same test in the same room. This would change it. Like this actually, even if you had to put the virtual reality on your head in order to do the test, like I jokingly wrote down, I'm going to invent a virtual reality that sets up virtual reality and, you know, get people going on that as like the starter kit type thing. So it's a little pet rock. That's okay. But you know, when I think about all the different angles that come with this, it's interesting just all the different directions it can go. But at any rate, so Clint or Adam, what's the final kind of takeaway? What do you want people to remember from this?
Well, I'd like to say that people that are looking into virtual reality, I think it definitely has its use cases, that it can benefit, you know, your employees, your trainees, you know, hopefully, you know, with the work that Adam does, benefit the society. And, you know, it's might not be, you know, as hard as you think, to get into it and to start doing this type of trainings. And it's a good system to supplement some of your other trainings with.
Adam, I got a different question for you. I'm sorry, overtime here, but so if you're in South Dakota, do you have any sort of like carbon pipelines or whatever Denny Sanford is doing there, trying to split the atom underground emergencies? And do you have any kind of unique outside the box ones? And the reason I'm bringing it up is there's a lot of carbon pipelines that are going into communities. And this is a relatively new emergency and danger to a community. And where I'm going with the question is whether it's a uranium or whether it's, you know, like I said, that science project that they have going and lead and that sort of thing, where would it be beneficial to have a virtual reality in something that is kind of unique like this? Or is it better to have, I guess, I don't know. You don't really want a carbon leak emergency. You want to be prepared for it in the same way. And Minot, North Dakota, they had the anhydrous ammonia emergency that happened on the rail cars, where there was a spill and a couple people died. And so, you know, that's what I'm saying. There's emergency management from all different areas, you know, anhydrous ammonia leak, that sort of thing. That's a bizarre one that people don't think of. So when you think of all these different areas you have to be prepared for, and the carbon pipeline is fresh in my mind because I've done a couple interviews in the last month, where when you have something like that and you're a county and you can't just really go and, you know, do that type of a thing. How would that work? I mean, is this something where the virtual reality would get you ahead of the game on some of this emergency preparedness, or would it put you behind, or have you thought about that at all?
Yeah. I guess I can't say that I've thought about that specifically. I don't know. You know, we do have some pipelines running through the county here, gas and fuel. I don't know offhand if we have any carbon pipelines or not. Not that I'm aware of, anyways. But what I'll say is that, you know, any kind of pre-training we can do for our responders, like that starts to set them up for success, like versus versus having to be completely reactionary. So if you look at a lot of these, pipeline companies and industries, most of them have some pretty good, robust internal response plans where the onus is really on them to manage the long-term care of those emergencies. I recently got to sit through a tabletop exercise with a local pipeline organization, and I was quite awe-inspired by the level of thought and articulation that they had put into their emergency response planning and guides and processes, and overall abilities. And they were very, they were very willing to let other first responders attend this training and encouraged it to participate in it. So they started to form those relationships. Now, I know we're talking about VR here, so how virtual reality would be integrated into that, I'm not sure. I am sure that there's probably a way to, a way to leverage VR for some portion of that. But anytime, just training in general, like anytime we can do pre-training, whether or not we're using cool technology or not, but anytime we're doing pre-training to prepare for potential significant emergencies such as pipeline events or whatever, in the higher risk category, low frequency, high risk situations, the better off we're going to be by training ahead for that.
Rock slides. You'd have rock slides out in the Black Hills occasionally, I suppose.
Yeah, that's certainly in some of the roads, at least, that could be a potential.
Well, I could see even where virtual reality just identifying the emergency, the carbon pipeline, for example, the carbon is heavier than the air, so it's low to the ground. So by the time you find out, you're dead. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those. So by the time you find out, it's too late. And so, and there's been a couple communities that have gone through it. And I just brought that one up as an example, because on the eastern side of South Dakota, it's a hot button issue where,
right.
I tell you what, Clint, I think we should get a, some kind of carbon virtual reality and go to some of these communities. They would, they'd line up to take a look at that, because that's a hot button issue. Like I said, in these 5 to 7 states that are doing this carbon pipeline, because it's going to add a new cost, new training, and new equipment for emergency management staff. Anytime you get a new pipeline with carrying anything. And I even mentioned, the rock slides and the whatever is going on with the uranium and splitting the atom and that sort of thing. There's always emergency management that comes with it. So I see the virtual reality just being a cost saver at the end of the day. Time saver, cost saver, logistics saver. People can do it on their own time. You can customize it. You can do a something that's pretty basic certification as well, type of a thing. But anyway, I'm not trying to do a commercial here. I'm just kind of actually organically thinking in my head as this. I'm preparing for a carbon pipeline meeting next month. I have to introduce people, and there's going to be some pipeline experts speaking on it and that sort of thing. So I know it's not in your neck of the woods, Mr. Adam Davis, but over on the east side of the state of South Dakota, probably the number one issue for probably emergency management staff. How are we going to pay for, train, and figure out this carbon pipeline emergency management type of a thing? So Clint, any final thoughts? Adam, any final thoughts here? Sorry, I get talking sometimes and I get rolling, but that's how I process.
No, it's all good, Jason. I think you're right on, and just being able to be a little bit more proactive in your trainings and get something together that like Adam said, it's not the first time you've gone through it. Once you go through a virtual reality simulation, it's something that you're kind of familiar with, and it sticks with you, and definitely could have its benefits there.
Yeah, for sure, Jason. Just appreciate your time, and I appreciate Clint. I'm always awe-inspired and pleased when I see people out there trying to, trying to figure out how to help make the world a better place, basically. With Clint's unique background, understanding the system of virtual reality and really how to build it. I think it's great that there's people like him out there doing this to try and help out society. I think it's awesome.
That was Adam Davis, Pennington County, South Dakota Emergency Management, and Clint Kling with Shepherd VR.